This episode of the Deck Tees Podcast is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Become a part of their customer rewards program when you make any purchase and receive discounts on all future orders. That is CoolStuffInc.com. Welcome to episode 102 of the Deck Tees Podcast. I am your host, Aaron Campbell. My guest today is the tall, dark, and handsome man behind Either Games, who served overseas before he decided to open up his own store. Here to talk about finance, his business, and of course himself, he is Kyle Lopez. Hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good. Just ate, so I'm feeling full.
What did you eat?
I had some little lobster pasta dish thing. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah, I'm not really a seafood person, so you kind of lost me there.
Oh, you're crazy. Growing up in Louisiana, it's like they force you to eat lobster when you're like 3 months. So
I remember that you said you were from Louisiana because I was watching something on Frontline. I was watching this crazy story about how they were trying to like segregate the schools.
I'll just put it like this. I'm glad that I'm not there. There's some obscene politics going on down there that I'm glad I'm not a part of.
Yeah, it was crazy. And I remember tweeting about it, and you had said that you grew up there and that you had some insight on it. And I was completely blown away. I had no idea that was happening anywhere in the country, but apparently it
yeah.
is.
You wouldn't think so, but yeah.
Yeah. This is your first time on a podcast.
Yes, I'm a little nervous. So.
Nervous? All right. Well, I've had a lot of first-timers on my show. I'd like to think that my show is a really good starting point for people looking to be on podcasts. So I think we're going to have fun.
Awesome.
Yeah. So the reason why I wanted you on, Kyle, is we've talked a little bit. I've known you for a while on Twitter. I've gotten to run into you at events, and you've always been really lovely. I enjoy your store. I recently ordered something through you guys and came in fast, came in good. I was very happy. But I've always been really fascinated by the stores. Like when I go on TCG Player and I go to buy a card, there are dozens and dozens of stores, and not just the big stores like Star City and TCG and Channel Fireball, but there's all these, I don't want to say little guys, but like people doing it themselves, or they're starting their own stores out of their own homes. And I'm really curious to know what that's like. So I wanted to have you on the show to sort of take me behind the scenes into your world and what it was like and who you are. And we'll talk a little bit of finance. And I want to learn all about that. So hopefully you can help me.
Right. I can say like off the bat that whenever we were doing research into like getting this whole thing started, there isn't a lot of information out there. And what there is hard to find. So yeah, it's actually kind of exciting to be a part of this.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where like I've looked at my collection and I'm just like, could I do this? But like you said, there's really nowhere to. There's not a set how-to book of how to start a card store, how to run a card store. And right. You know, some people do like to keep their secrets, you know, close to their chest, you know, rightfully so. And
especially when it comes to business.
Right. So I'm hoping we can learn a little bit about that today. So I want to know about you before we start talking about the business. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Lafayette, Louisiana,
yeah.
Which is a medium-sized city in between Baton Rouge and Lake Charles. It's very humid. It's a pretty nice place. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs. My parents are still together, which is kind of rare today.
Yeah.
Especially in the South. but yeah, I mean, what else do you want to know?
Good childhood?
Yeah. Like I said, my parents they're pretty great. I started playing Magic when I was sixth grade, 12
yeah.
or so. So I'm 31 now. So yeah, that would be like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
With my buddy Mitch Calvert and Mike Martin, we started during Revised and Fallen Empires. if I'd have known that Duel Lands would be worth as much as they are today, I would have hoarded them.
Isn't that crazy when like you look at cards that you grew up with that you didn't really see the big deal about? Like I remember one card in particular is Lion's Eye Diamond.
Yeah.
I remember having one of those back in the day and going, I have no use for this. And it would just sit in my box and maybe I'd have it on a bookshelf somewhere. And now they're $70, $80 a piece now.
Funny story about that card. I've been playing off and on for pretty much the entire time. Like I'll quit here, quit there, but it always brings me back. But Lion's Eye Diamond, everybody thought was the worst card ever printed when it came out. Like,
yeah.
It's basically because there was no real use for it. You know, I mean, now there's a deck that in Legacy, that's that card and Infernal Tutor, which is basically Demonic Tutor and Black Lotus, two of the most powerful cards ever printed, that it's got a spot for it. But I remember very clearly when it came out, it was completely worthless. I mean, you could find them in dime boxes, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy. So you started playing Magic at an early age. Did you ever get into competitive Magic, or were you always just sort of casual?
I had a buddy around, God, I must have been like 16. His name was Garrett, and Garrett LeBlanc, and he was very, very good. Like, he would win PTQs, and he had an insane collection. And he was more of a shark back in the day, because back in the day, you didn't have any internet on your phone to find out what card prices were. So, I mean, the guys who hit the grind, they were sharks back in the day. And he got me into competitive Magic, and I never did super great. I have a hard time focusing sometimes, so as much fun as Magic is, I'm not that good. I've always been better at like the finance side.
It's interesting that you say that. Do you think that you would have gotten into the finance side and opened your own store if you had been good at magic?
That's an interesting question. I can't tell you. Probably because I'm business and finance minded, so I think I would have been drawn to that anyway. Like, I was drawn to poker, like a lot of Magic players, and I played semi-professionally for a little while, and that started because of my love of Magic. And yeah, so I think I eventually would have ended up here.
It's interesting because I know one of the things that I've sort of clung to, because when I first started playing Magic again, I'm like you. I started in 7th grade. I remember Fallen Empires. I remember Lurgoyf being one of my first cards from Ice Age. And I remember, I came from playing World of Warcraft where I was really good. I was in a top 200 guild. I had very good gear. I was considered somewhat of an authority on my class. But when I came back to Magic, I was bad. I mean, I was really, really bad. And I'm not saying that I'm great now, but I hold my own now. And one of the things that got me through the learning curve and all those rough parts was that I had my show, and I could say, well, I'm not good at this, but I'm good at this. And I feel like the better I'm getting at magic, it's not that I don't want to do my show anymore, but I kind of start wondering what's like, could I just do the grind? Like, because I don't need that crutch to be good at something anymore because I'm starting to get good at something else. And that's why I was wondering if maybe the store and the finance is your I'm good at this, you know?
Yeah, I think that I would have ended up here anyway. I mean, I've always been more interested in what a card costs than what it can do.
Now, did you go to school for finance or anything?
No, actually, I did very little school time. I kind of didn't study hard enough and went out too often between the ages of like 18 and 21. And that actually led to me joining the military because it was time to really do something, and I was just kind of having fun. And so I joined the Air Force around 21. I was in military intelligence for 4 years. I did all my 4 years in California, actually. During that time, I picked up Magic again because, like I said, I was in and out a lot. And I actually met Michael Hetrick, and I met Luis Scott Vargas once or twice. He's very nice. He's always been insanely nice. But Michael Hetrick was like just a kid at the time. He wasn't like doing insane like he is now. But he's still, I still consider him a good friend. And yeah, so I started back up with Magic. I was there for 4 years. I left there and I took a job in Ohio in Dayton, which is where I'm at now. And did a job here for 3 years, like on the outside and as a contractor. And then I took a job in Afghanistan for 2 years as a airborne sensor operator. So I'd fly around and we'd look for bad guys and stuff and bombs and stuff. And did that for 23 out of 26 months. I was in Afghanistan almost straight. So yeah, it was a lot of time over there.
What was that like?
I don't really know how to explain it. It was a grind. It was basically, you got a routine and you stuck with it. You'd get up, you'd go to work, you'd come back, you'd go to the gym, you'd watch, like, I don't know, one of the 50 books or 50 TV shows that I caught up on, and you'd go to sleep and you'd do it over and over and over again. And eventually you'd go to sleep in, June, and you'd wake up and it would be like November. So it went by pretty quick. But there were some moments where, I mean, you're in a war zone, so they would have like mortars and stuff. They would throw mortars at the base, and every now and then you'd hear one explode, or you'd hear if somebody got hit or something. But you just kind of like, they have a saying which is like, little bullet, big sky. So, the odds of something like that happening are so little, but it's still a reality.
Was it difficult for you coming home to like get adjusted again? Because I know sometimes you hear these stories of people where it just sticks with them and it's hard to shake.
For me, no, because I wasn't like on the ground. I wasn't like a grunt or like a marine or anything, like busting doors down and stuff. I flew in a plane over the country, and I can't really talk too much about what we did over there.
Oh,
But
sure.
like, But it wasn't like, you know, I don't have PTSD or anything. Like, they had a TGI Fridays on base and stuff.
Oh, wow.
So, it didn't affect me too bad.
Now, are you out, or like, is there a way, have you thought about going back, or?
Well, I have this, excuse me. I have this, the way that my job works is they say, hey, we want you overseas. You only get paid when you're overseas. So I could go back if I wanted to, but basically I'm on like leave of absence right now because I started this up, and really I'm going to probably tell them in a little while that, you know, hey, I'm not going to be coming back.
Wow. So that must mean you really like what you do now.
Yes. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I was wondering about that. If they ever could just suddenly call you one day and say, we need you, you've got to go, what would happen to the store? You know, I wondered about that.
Yeah. Like they couldn't. Like they've already called me and said, hey, we need people. And I'm just like, nah, I'm not going, you know, like I'm on leave of absence whenever I want to go back. Luckily, that's the difference between being a contractor and being in the military. If I'm in the military, you know, I have to go, like I have no choice. But as a contractor, they tell me and I make the choice, and I make the choice when I come home too. Mm-hmm.
So if you didn't have the store, would you be career military, or do you have something else in mind you'd want to do?
I don't know. I've thought about, going back to school for maybe finance or something, but this is really what I've always wanted to do is have my own store and have my own business, really. Cause it's not just the store that we want to focus on. We have a lot of plans in the future, and the store is just one part of it. But I think this is what I would be doing in some kind of, effect.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about the idea for this. Like, where did you get the idea that, hey, I want to start my own store?
So me and my business partner, Josh Thornton, who's a really good close friend of mine, who's a like-minded guy like me, we went to Grand Prix DC last year, which was a legacy event, and we just kind of had some really candid conversations with some of the vendors there, which surprised me looking back on it, how candid they were, about what it took, you know, how much you can really make, what, you know, how you can get started doing this. And to us, it seemed like almost a no-brainer with my collection and with the funds that we had available, the capital. And, you know, it just kind of seemed like, hey, we could do this, you know. So while I was overseas the last time, we looked into it. We looked into the different tools you can use to sell online, because we figured like online is the way to start. We want to have an online store before we have a physical store. As a matter of fact, we don't have a physical store right now. We're looking into that. But so we looked into the different software packages, inventory management stuff. And we picked the right one, and you know, we designed a website, and we did the marketing materials, like the logo and stuff and all that kind of stuff, like the tablecloths and all the marketing stuff, which actually is a lot more expensive than you would think. And we booked. I scoured the internet to find out what GPs were coming and who ran them. And once I found that information out, I basically email bombed all the guys that I could think of. And Professional Event Services got back to us first, and we booked two events with them, which was Grand Prix Cincy and Grand Prix Philly of this year. And we just kind of like jumped head first. You know, I learned a lot through Quiet Speculation, the forum for MTG Finance. You know, I got a lot of contacts from there and talked to some store owners to see – pretty much everybody I talked to was like, you shouldn't go that route. It's much too expensive. It's, you know, it's going to be way – you shouldn't jump head first. And I've always kind of been a risk taker, so I decided to do it that way.
So you decided to start this store. Where did you get the cards from? Like, did you happen to have a collection of your own, or like how did that come into play?
Yeah, okay. So me and Josh – had been playing for a while, and combined we had about a $25,000 collection.
Wow.
So that was a decent starting point for our inventory. Luckily, we didn't have to just go out and buy stuff. We could save that capital for the events. Mm-hmm. So at the event, what you want to do is you want to buy everything. You want to buy everything in sight. You want to run out of money, and then you want to bring that stuff home, sort it, inventory it, grade it, put it online, and then have people buy it. And you want to do that over and over and over again. And that's how the model works. So, yeah.
So where are you doing this? Like, are you doing it out of your house? Or?
Yeah, it's out of my house, actually. Okay. It's my house. My business partner sold his house and moved in.
Okay.
I basically wake up every morning, and I have my workers. We have four guys that work for us. And they're already at the house usually, pulling orders from the previous day, anywhere up to like 400 orders or so, which is kind of an awesome milestone. Because, I mean, we used to get excited about 50 orders. You know, once we hit 50 and then 100, we were like, oh, man, we're actually selling stuff. And now it's kind of like we definitely grew pretty quickly, which is really exciting. But we'll wake up. Our guys will pull the orders. Me and Josh will do like owner type stuff. Like personally, I'm looking for locations for our physical store. Looking into that. He does the day-to-day operations. Like he talks to customers if they have any issues with their orders. He does the customer service. He does the hours and the payroll for the guys. I do a little bit of the books. So we do our owner stuff, and then we have our guys. We have two packers and who also do sorting. And we have one guy who's in charge of inventory, which basically he's the guy who's supposed to be in charge of on top of prices. Mm-hmm. So he'll say, okay, hey, this card spiked. We should raise the price or we should lower the price. Or he just stays on top of that stuff. Or, hey, I think like Courser is going to go long this season. Let's like make it a little bit more so we can, play it long. And
sure.
Stuff. So he's like our Evan Irwin, I guess you could say. That's the day-to-day operation. And then I'll be online looking for other opportunities for events, whether it be small events or GP level events. We have a schedule that we kind of work with because GPs are, we know when GPs are going to be. So we're either getting ready for an event or we're unloading from an event what we've bought, and we sort and inventory it, and then we put it online, and then we just turn inventory, and that's what we're all about.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to the beginning a little bit more. Now I know we can't talk about specific figures, and I would never do that, but is it anything like starting, like, let's say a restaurant or starting another business where there's, you have like you go to a bank and you have like a business proposal and you get a loan from the bank and you have like your startup costs. Like, did you have startup costs for this?
Oh yeah, we had quite a bit of startup costs. And, mm-hmm. You need computers for everybody. You need tables, shelving, marketing material. Like I said, T-shirts, banners, cases are extremely expensive, like cases that you bring with you to shows to put cards in. And then you have your supplies, like sleeves and stuff like that. And then every time a set comes out, you need to be able to get a hold of, X amount of cases of the set. So you have that expense. There's always somebody trying to sell you, like, a collection. Like, that's the thing in this business is, like – it's very easy to find stuff for sale at a great price. It's just, there's so much out there, whether it's somebody selling their collection or somebody selling a piece of power or a bunch of power or whatnot, there's always something to buy. As far as your initial question, like startup, we had a little bit of startup. I'll put it like this. We had a decent amount of money to start with, but I would love to have had three times that. You can never have enough. Mm-hmm. I would say for somebody who wants to do this, you should have at least a $25,000 collection. Personally, I wish it was a little bit more. I would want like $50,000 in inventory, and then probably at the very least $50,000 cash to start.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, it's a lot of people. I don't know. A lot of people who ask me questions about it, they don't realize if you're going to grind GPs, like if you're going to open a store, it's a little bit different. Store fixtures and stuff like that can be had for very cheap. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a lot to start up. If it's a great location, you don't have to have really anything. Just open a store and you'll get, you'll start making money quick. Mm-hmm. But the GP circuit is very competitive, especially now. Everybody wants to do it. The booths, when I started, were pretty cheap, but now they're getting up there in price. So you have more in booth costs to pay. You have to pay your guys on the weekend. There's quite a few expenses, we like to keep our margins like as low as possible so we can have competitive pricing. So, a lot of people, that's one of the good feedback we've gotten is a lot of people like our buy prices and they like our sell prices, which is kind of, it's either one or the other in this business from what we found.
And you're doing both.
Right.
Wow.
So we like to keep, that's one thing that we're very proud of. Mm-hmm.
So did you have a backup plan? Because, it sounds risky.
It's very risky. basically, we pooled our resources and we jumped head first. Honestly, I've never really been one to make a backup plan. like I said, I used to play poker for a long time, and the risk is kind of like part of the appeal to me. Mm-hmm. So I've always wanted to do something like this. I was in a marriage for a little while and that ended up poorly. And, I was changing careers and I was like, I'm tired of doing what I'm doing. I'm in a good spot to be able to do something. I have a great business partner who really knows a lot and who's very like-minded like me. You know, we might as well just do it. Like, let's do it and see how it turns out. And if I would have wanted to do this and didn't take the plunge, I would have kicked myself forever. Like, if this fails tomorrow, I'll be happy because, I won't be happy, but I'll be, content because I took the leap. You know, that's a big part of it for me.
Do your folks know what you do?
Yeah. Actually, my dad and my mom, they're actually pretty proud that, especially my dad, that I did something of my own. He always wanted to have something of his own, and he works for the oil field, and he does very well for himself. But, he's really excited that, I've got something that I can call my own.
Very cool. So what were those first few events like when you were first starting out and you were first, like you said, you email bombed all of the TOs and you were trying to get on GPs. What were those first few GPs like?
They were a nightmare. The first one, we didn't bring enough people. So luckily it was a local event and we knew a lot of the guys there, and I had a bunch of the guys that we knew help us out. And it was just me, Josh, and my purchasing manager, Keith, who's the guy that I had mentioned is like the Evan Irwin of Aether. So it was us three, and we just were swamped. So we got some help with some guys sorting and stuff like that. And, the next event, we're like, okay, we're going to have five people because five's a little bit, that seems like we'll have enough. And that was too many people. So, like, the sweet spot for us is four people. Four people is perfect. We have one guy selling. We have two guys buying. And we have one guy that's basically a jack of all trades who can do whatever we need. And that's, like, perfect for us. But we were just, like, it was nonstop. Like, the first two events, I think I ate once, like, the entire weekend, maybe.
Wow.
It was just nonstop. They would come up to me and be like, hey, man, can we take a break? And I'm just like, there's probably four people waiting, so. But after that, we pretty much have a rhythm now. I mean, we know what we're doing, we fit into a groove, so it took a little while, but we have our footing for sure.
What was the reception like from the other vendors? Was there any sort of, oh, who's this new vendor in town or anything like that?
You know what? There was almost none of that. The thing that probably surprised me the most about this industry is how awesome everybody is. I won't say everybody, but for the most part, almost everybody is willing to work with us. They're willing to, we have two guys that we deal with a lot, and they're Rob and Dave from Two Headed Games out of North Kentucky, and they have been like our mentors a lot of the way, and they've just been fantastic. Like, we love working with those guys. Those guys are amazing. And it's really been more of that than the opposite. There's some people who just kind of like, they can't really work with anybody. They have bad personalities or whatever. But even then, there's things you can work out with them. And like everybody knows Ogre, and Ogre's been awesome with us. And even John at Star City was like, he answered a lot of questions starting up. So for the most part, the vendors have been really awesome.
I've noticed that even on Twitter. Like, I love watching you and Nick Beckvar go at it.
Yeah.
A little too much. But it's interesting. I remember when we were at Gen Con, you guys were having a drink at the Gathering Magic party. And like, I would see these heated discussions that you would get into. And I would just assume that they would be ending badly, or there'd be some sort of blood there, or, oh, this vendor thinks he's all that, or there'd be some sort of competitiveness there. And it really wasn't. At the end of the day, there was still that respect there. If you're doing you, I'm doing me. There's enough for everybody. And I thought that was really cool.
I really like Nick a lot. I respect him a lot because, like I said, I started in Quiet Speculation. He was one of the guys that I talked to before I started this whole thing up. And he was he's one of the guys who like warned me that it's not all fun and games. There's a lot to it. And he's got a much smaller operation than we do. But, I do like going head to head with him a bit. We both have like type A personalities and we both think that we're always right. So it kind of like when we have conflicting opinions, it's pretty obvious. But yeah, I like Nick a lot. He's been one of the cool vendors that I've talked about that's helped us with a lot of stuff. And it's always, he's one of the guys that I'll always bounce something off of because he's a bright guy. And Nick's cool.
Now, you mentioned, that he had sort of warned you about how it's not all sunshine and roses. So what were some of the more difficult parts of getting this going, or some of the moments where you were like, I'm not sure about this?
Well, growth to begin with was much quicker than we anticipated, which a lot of business guys will tell you is a problem you want to have, which absolutely it was. But, when it's me and Josh and one other guy, and like all of a sudden we have 100 orders to get done like that day, it's like when it's three people, it's kind of a lot to get done, especially with the rest of what you have to do with the business. So there's been a few nights where me and Josh stayed up until probably 2 a.m. putting orders out, or, you know, talking to people about their orders. Growth is it's been great, but it's definitely we've definitely had some growing pains.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that he mentioned was I mean, just the basics. He didn't jump right back into it, or he didn't jump head first into it like we did. He has another job. He's like a one-man operation. Like I said, we do a lot of volume, especially for a new store. And, you know, he was one of the guys that was just like, look, man, it's not as simple as like doing this and then going for it. There's a lot to it. And, you know, that's really the gist of that.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the future. Right now. So when you look at either games, do you consider yourself and your store to be a success?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And what do you use to determine that?
Okay. So
like, are you somebody who's looking at the dollars and saying we're successful? Or are you looking at all the happy people? Like, what's your metric for that?
My metric is a combination of pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. The dollar aspect, you know, it pays my bills. It's growing all the time. The growth is still, even months later, still fabulous. You know, like, there's so many things that we want to do. We just don't have enough time in the day to do them, which is, like I said, a problem that we want to have.
Mm-hmm.
The guys that we started out with and the guys we have today, it's a great team. You know, they actually like working for us. Me and Josh, we love being our own bosses. It's, you know, it's a lot of fun because I get to, as cheesy as it sounds, I get to choose my destiny. Like, I get to choose whether or not it fails or it's a success. And I think because of the passion that we have with this, that we are destined for success. And I mean, that's why I believe that.
Mm-hmm. You said throughout the show that, you know, this is something you've always wanted to do. And now that you're actually doing it, is it anything like you imagined it would be?
I thought it would be a lot easier.
Yeah.
I thought our margins would be a bit deeper. I thought I had plenty of cash, and all three of those things were wrong. but as far as why I wanted to do it and where we are now and where we're headed, I would probably say that I exceeded my expectations. It's a lot of fun. I like doing it. Like I said, I get up every morning and I'm not like, oh, I got to go fly or I got to do whatever at my old job. Like, I get up and I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to see what we have, you know, what we have next. When we have an event, it's like you feel this buzz with all of us on the team. We're just ready to like go out and like make things happen. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
One of the things I'm always super curious about, and I know we talked a little bit about this when you were at GP Chicago, is the what sets you apart. Because when you go to a GP, you all kind of look the same. Like, no offense, of course, but like, you know, you see all these vendors and you see the MTG card market next to the Hot Sauce Games, next to the Cool Stuff Inc., next to the Channel Fireball. And there's really nothing distinguishing about you all other than maybe your banners or like, if I look at the deals, I don't really see like, okay, this guy is maybe 5% less and it's a couple cents less. So, you know, what do you find sets you apart from the other stores? Like, you know, what drives people to you as opposed to those other stores?
Online, I would have to say customer support. Mm-hmm. Josh is rain, sleet, or snow, whether he's sleeping or not, he's answering questions. He's doing things that, you know, if somebody has a problem with an order, he reacts as quickly as he can. We've had a lot of really positive feedback as far as that goes. Also, like I said, pricing. We want to keep our margins as thin as possible so we can do more volume. And in order to do that, we can give better prices and we can better sell prices, and we can also give better buy prices.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we distinguish ourselves with our competition. For like a store like SCG or CFB, our goal is to be the Star City or Channel Fireball of the Midwest. Mm-hmm. There's so much insane levels of Magic players and events, and just the community out here is just super strong and huge. And we want to be, you know, you have Channel Fireball in the West, you have Star City on the East, and we want to be the guys in the Midwest. And I think that really with our customer service and our pricing, we can accomplish that. Also, for live events, I would have to say that one of the best feedbacks that we get from people is they like to sit down and buy with us because we actually talk to them. We like, you know, banter back and forth, or we won't just treat them like, you know, another guy in the line. And I like to think that that sets us apart as well.
Is that something you worry about maybe losing if you get too big? Because, you know, to be quite honest, you know, I agree with you about what you said about being more personable when they're selling with you, because I feel like with the bigger stores, you don't really get that a lot of the times. And you do sort of feel like it's this nameless, faceless transaction. And, you know, I feel like part of the reason you're able to do that is because you are a smaller store. I don't mean that in a bad way, but
right.
You know, do you worry about that? Where if you get too big, you might lose some of that personality or some of that, you know what I mean?
No, I don't think so, because okay. The way that we do things is personally, I like to find something that works and stick with it.
Okay.
Like my purchasing manager, Keith, is fantastic at pretty much everything that he does. And one of those things that he does is he's the head buyer. So, you know, he's the guy that people sit down with, and he's done fantastic at it. And like, he's going to be that way forever, as long as he's with us. And, you know, I think that a good example of that is John at Star City Games. A lot of people like him. You know, he's personable. He's been in the game forever. Everybody knows his face. So, you know, I think that's a good pattern to emulate. And I think we can accomplish that.
Mm-hmm. Now, another thing I'm curious about is these upcoming PTQ changes, the pre-PTQs or PPTQs, and
yes.
It sounds like there's going to be a lot more events that are held at the stores themselves, so that might make it a little more difficult for outside vendors to come in. Like, is that something you're worried about, or does that affect you at all?
Well, it affects us a little bit in the fact that we don't actually have a physical store right now. So we can't run events. We can't have events in our store that we don't have. But in the Midwest, especially this area of Ohio, it's not going to affect us terribly. And that's because Comic Town is the big guys in Columbus, and they run amazing events. They actually broke the record for PTQ last year. I think it was like 363 people.
Wow.
And the way that they do that is they have insane prize support, and they just rent out a convention center and they market the hell out of it. And we've worked with them in the past, and they've been another group of guys that have just been amazing. We love working with those guys. Their events are always killer. For us, you know, we love working with them. They've expressed wanting to work with us in the future. And, you know, I actually talked to Scott, and he was like, you know what, man? We're not worried about it at all. We're going to keep on trucking. We're going to keep on making these huge events, 5K prize pools and stuff, and 1K on the side. So for us personally, it's not going to affect us. But I mean, smaller operations like Nick Beckvar, and, you know, operations where it's like, you know, 50 or so sales a day, they're definitely going to be hurt a lot, because a lot where they get their cards is those smaller events. You know, not everybody can pony up the booth cost and, you know, a ton of money to be able to grind GPs. And where they get their product is locally and from those smaller events. And now that there's not as many smaller events, and that's going to naturally lead to stores not wanting to have vendors, it's going to dry up the card pool for them. I mean, I think it's better in the long run for the grind and for, you know, Wizards as a whole, what they want to do with this product. Mm-hmm. But for the smaller vendors, it definitely hurts. But luckily for us, it doesn't hurt us too much.
Are you familiar with the changes they're making to standard with the more rotating?
Yes, and we love them.
Yes? How do you think that? Break it down for me, because I admit, to be perfectly frank, I'm not even sure what it means on a competitive level quite yet.
Yeah.
How does it affect you on a financial level?
So on a financial level, right now, you have basically half the format rotates at once. So mm-hmm. What that means for prices is people start dumping their cards very early. I mean, people started dumping Ravnica block stuff in like June, you know, which is fine. I mean, it means that we get stuff for cheaper, but we can't move stuff for of a more expensive price. But for the format, it's going to allow, like, there's going to be six sets that are in rotation at once. Mm-hmm. And then once a new block comes out, the last two leave. So it'll be anywhere from 5 to 6 sets at once. Mm-hmm. It basically smooths out the year. Instead of having 4 sets rotate at once and having this massive change once a year, it's going to allow a lot more change. It's going to have a lot more people excited for more cards. You know, like a big complaint we hear is that, you know, if it wasn't for Lifebane Zombie, Green White would have been insane this year, which is true. But, you know, so many Green White cards had such potential, like, you know, Advent of the Worm or Wolf Mainline, I think.
Fleece Mainline.
Yeah, Fleecebane line. But those cards did nothing, especially financially, because of that one card. Well, what the smaller rotation format is going to do is it's going to allow those cards a chance to shine. So financially, a lot more cards are going to be worth a lot more for a lot longer.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So if somebody were to come up to you at an event and say, I want to do what you do, would you encourage them, and what advice would you give them?
The advice I would give them would be save all your money. wait until you have a lot of money cash. Like, now we're not talking like investments. I'm talking cash money that you can access at any one time. Have a large collection. Grind it up until you can't grind it anymore. And you're going to have to take a leap, because this is all or nothing, at least on our level. You know, there's a lot of guys who make a side business doing this, and that's great. I just think that one of the reasons we did this is because me and Josh have a lot of ambition. We have a lot of things that we want to do, and it's not just starting a card store. A lot of, not to talk bad on card store owners or anything, or game store owners for that matter, but a lot of guys, they like to start a store, pay for their hobby, make $14 an hour, and then, you know, go home. Mm-hmm. But for me and Josh, it's a lot more than that. This is like, it's a passion for us. We want to grow this business as much as possible. We want to be a big name, and we want to provide as much as possible to the player base. So they're happy, we're happy, and everybody's happy.
Mm-hmm. So where do you see yourself and Either Games in the next year or two?
Huh.
Have you thought that far ahead?
Yeah, we do. So next year, there's 17 events that we want to go to. This year, we will have done, because we have 2 GPs coming up. We will have done 6 GPs and 3 small events. Next year, we want to be able to do 17 GPs, which means another team of people doing GPs. It means a lot more turnover. A lot more volume. The first thing on our list is to have a physical store, which we're looking at now. And then multiple stores and just marketing, mm-hmm. you know.
Are you ready for all that?
I'm sorry?
Are you ready for all that?
Yeah. I think that we've gotten good at pacing ourselves and doing what needs to be done. So, yeah, I think that we have a good plan ahead. And I think that we're on track to do what we want to do.
Okay. One of my listeners had submitted a question on Twitter, Anz M. Lakar. I think I slaughtered that. But he asked a very common question around this time with a new set coming out. What are the best cards to pre-order from Cons of Tarkir, if any?
Honestly, I'm going to say that I disagree with pre-ordering 90% of the time.
Because, really?
Well, because financially, from a financial standpoint, cards are never more expensive than when they first come out, except for very rare cases. Like, you have your Sphinx's Revelation that went from like $6 at pre-order to like, you know, $30 at the height of standard. But for the most part, most cards are going to be like Purphoros, which was like $25 and has been like $6 the entirety of standard. So personally, I'm going to say not any of them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's my answer to that.
I was expecting all this like spicy finance tech, and no.
Sorry, I couldn't.
You couldn't get it up for me, Kyle. Jeez.
Yeah, I know. Next time.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to you on the show and they want to check out Either Games, how can they get a hold of you? Where can they find you?
Okay, so our website is aemtg.com. Mm-hmm. We're on TCG Player as Aether Games. We are on Facebook as Aether Games. You can follow us on Twitter at Aether Games, or you can follow me at It's Your Boy Lope, L-O-P-E. My email, if you have any questions, is kyle@aemtg.com.
Okay. And where did the name Aether Games come from?
That's actually kind of a funny story. Initially, we were bouncing around the idea of starting a contracting company for the military. But the economy on that just kind of fell through, and Josh is the one who came up with the name, and it was going to be like Aether Government Solutions or something, and we kind of just dropped it, and we're like, well, Aether Games kind of fits, you know, so we just ran with it, really. And then we kind of looked up what Aether, like the concept of the Aether is and stuff, and it was really cool, and we could use the ash symbol, which is the hybrid AE, as our marketing. It just kind of like all fit, you know.
Wow. So you made that the name of your store before you knew what it meant?
Kind of, yeah. That was one of them. I can't remember the other. We had like 3 of them that we were thinking of, but that's the one we went with. And then we looked it up and we're like, yeah, that's what we got.
That would have been so embarrassing if it was like a word that was worse than either, and you're like, we are douche nozzle games, and you look it up and you're like,
exactly.
We're gonna reapply for a different trademark.
Yeah, luckily I have a good graphic artist on retainers for, so we could have changed it up if we needed to.
I could just see it on Twitter. What happened to that really nice store we used to shop at? They had a really cool douche nozzle games. Where'd they go? And I don't know. They just disappeared. But there's just either games here. They seem like nice people. Just deny.
They would set themselves apart for sure.
Well, Kyle, thank you so much for coming on the show. I definitely feel a little bit more well-versed in what you do, and I feel like I've gotten a lot of my questions answered. And hopefully anybody listening, if they wanted to do what you do, maybe they feel a little bit more inspired to do that. So thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And if anybody's enjoyed what they've heard here on the Deck Tees, you can always find the show first and foremost on GatheringMagic.com. Whoops. The show is available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave me a review and some stars. You can keep up with the show on Twitter at The Deck Tees. You can keep up with me at Original Estrus. And you can also email me personally at Estrus@ElitistJerks.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves. Okay? Bye.